I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
I'm Chris Hunter, and I'm the only one redefining masculinity. I started biking just because I found joy in it. I occasionally surf. I'm still bad at it, but I like to challenge myself. The point is, whether it's the exercises I do, the way I eat, the products that I'm creating or scaling, it's just about offering additional tools in your toolkit. And I take that same philosophy and apply it to my kids, as, you know, they need to understand how they, it's okay to get angry. You're going to get angry. How do you express it, right? What tools do you have?
I'm probably one of the few people I know who still looks forward to my Sunday newspaper, not a digital copy that I read on my phone, but the real finger-staining, loud crinkling, section-by-section newspaper. The Sunday paper for me is a treat to be enjoyed while lounging in bed and sipping hot lemon water. So one day when we were going through all of the Only One stories that are being submitted to us, thank you for those, by the way. We love reading them. It was Scott's idea to record and release a few of them occasionally, but always on Sundays, and call them our Sunday edition. And because they're only 30 minutes long, our hope is that you can enjoy them while sipping your morning beverage, going for a walk, or even just enjoying a lazy Sunday at home. Please enjoy today's Sunday edition, and be sure to listen every Thursday for a new installment of our Now Normal series. And of course, every Tuesday, when we drop another brand new episode of The Only One in the Room. Hey, Chris Hunter, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're so glad you're here. And I have a question for you that's a little off topic. I'm wondering, Chris, have you ever used a payphone or owned an answering machine?
That threw me for a loop there. It was unexpected. probably what you intended, but yes, both.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, when's the last time you used a payphone?
I'm going to spin it back to you a little bit. I don't remember the exact last time I used a payphone, but I can tell you the most memorable time a payphone was used that I was involved.
Please.
So my now wife went to spring break with me and a bunch of other people from college and decided that she needed to call her then boyfriend from a payphone in Cancun to break up with him.
Oh my goodness.
Oh damn. That's the best use of a payphone ever.
Yes. Yeah. And she broke up with him for you.
That's right.
All right.
Yeah, it all worked out in the end.
I like that a lot. Thank
now,
you for that.
It would be the best story if she left the message on the his answering machine.
Right. Yeah. Combine the two devices.
Yeah.
No, what I'm finding is there are a whole generation of people who have never even seen a payphone and, you know, have never seen or owned an answering machine. So I'm just curious. It's one of the questions I've been asking people.
Yeah, so fascinating. I have young kids, and so when they even see things like phones with wires, or I'll give you another example, we just bought a toaster, and it was just a regular two slot toaster, and it showed up the other day, and my son said, "Oh, we got an old fashioned toaster."
Oh, yeah.
And I started laughing. I said, "Or it could just be a toaster."
A toaster. That's hilarious. But it is interesting to see things through the eyes of young people, especially little young people like that.
Absolutely.
Thank you for that story. That was great. And I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is the Only One in the Room Sunday edition. But I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, hun. So I happen to have a Koya smoothie in front of me.
Right.
Okay. So my favorite is the mango. What's your favorite one?
I've only had two, and the mango is now my favorite. I had it this morning. I had another one yesterday after surfing. It was the, I think it was apple, pear.
Banana. Yeah.
And there was one.
Yeah, I like that
it.
One too.
Yeah. And they were perfect.
Love it.
Yeah.
You guys are on the ball because you're tasting the newest innovations. They've only been launched a few weeks now.
Well, of course we're on the ball. we're always cutting edge. They are delicious. And, you know, Scott and I are vegan. We live a completely plant-based lifestyle. So
we can really say that now, can't we?
We really can, hon. It's been more than 6 months.
Amazing.
So these are plant-based smoothies. They're delicious. They're 120 calories.
I think roughly.
And, you know, Scott is a surfer like you. And we're going to get to that later. But he put them in his surf kit to go down to the beach, right?
Yeah. And I also fast. So I usually come out of the water ready to eat. And I do kind of prefer something with protein that's liquid that way.
Yes.
And it's perfect, man. I'm sold.
Well, and I just prefer things that taste good. That's all I care about.
So we're hitting on all fronts.
Yes,
there.
You are. Yes, you are. It's easy. It's like I can just grab it from the fridge and it's delicious. So thank you for inventing these. And we're going to talk about them in a minute. Actually, we're going to talk about them now because I'm going to introduce you. Chris Hunter is the co-founder and CEO of Koya, the 100% plant protein drink that is naturally craveable and uses simple ingredients to deliver unparalleled nutrition. His stamp on the beverage industry began in 2005 with fusion projects. After seeing the huge popularity in combining caffeine and alcohol, Chris and his partners created Four Loko, a high-profile flavor malt beverage, that grew to be the 8th largest brewers in the country at its peak. Chris believes plant protein is the future, so do we. But that will only work if people love how it tastes, just like we said.
That's what I've been waiting for.
Koya achieves this with its low sugar and high protein, but it doesn't compromise on flavor, and I can attest to that. Koya has now sold in more than 5,000 stores across the country. Welcome, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure.
I'm going to give you one update real quick.
And sure.
So
yeah, please.
Since that was written and you received it, we actually have actually more than doubled in distribution. So our products are available in over 10,000 stores across the country and range in retail points of distribution from natural stores like Whole Foods and Sprouts all the way to conventional mass and even convenience stores like 7-Eleven. So they're widely available.
That's amazing.
Congrats.
And you didn't give me this information that long ago. So that means that increase has happened in a very short time. So that congratulations on that. That's great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. So we're going to take you back a little bit, Chris, and I'm going to ask you to tell me about growing up in the Midwest and what it was like in Youngstown.
Sure. Yes, I grew up in a town called Youngstown, Ohio. Nowadays, it could be considered a suburb of Cleveland. At one time, it was really a booming town, but it was driven by steel mills and the automotive industry, which have departed from that area. And so, you know, it was a really ethnic area, a lot of Italian, a lot of Irish, a lot of different ethnicities there. And it's really known as kind of a tough town. They call it the Steel Valley, and that's really because of the steel industry. But growing up, we always took that as kind of a badge of honor, like the Steel Valley is tough, right? And so that's where I grew up. Really happy that I grew up there. It really defined who I am at this point, and I think the trajectory of my life. I haven't lived there since I was 18 when I moved away from college, but a lot of my family is still back in that area.
Great. Yeah. So it's a blue collar town, right? Is that how you would categorize it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a blue collar town. I come from a blue collar family. My stepfather worked at a steel mill. My mom got what everybody wanted at that time, which was a factory job. She worked at Packard Electric and then at General Motors for a while. My dad, the same thing. He worked at a factory called Tamco. And so it's definitely a blue collar town, you know, known for hard work, producing a lot of people with grit, and you know, that's had its fair share of struggles.
Sure, sure. Can you tell me about the culture around gender roles there?
Yeah, so I don't know if it was a unique place in the world, but looking back on it, what I realized is that it was a very masculine place. As I mentioned, it was like known for its toughness, right, in general. And as I think about it now, I actually think it may have been on the verge, if not fully in the toxic masculinity realm, you know, like where the marks of masculinity or of being a man are all about being stoic. You're self-reliant, you're independent, you're tough, you're not vulnerable, violent, promiscuous, dominant, like you don't show emotion, you know, all these things that I think in today's world are changing and changing pretty rapidly. But at that time, that's just kind of how it was. At least that's how I perceived it.
Sure, sure. I can totally picture that. We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
This episode is being brought to you by Voyage AC.
So did I tell you my New Year's intention this year was to take better care of my skin?
Oh, that's a good one.
I know, I'm excited. And to that end, I'm going to try one new Voyage AC face and body product every week.
I would expect nothing less. So what's on the menu this week?
Let's see. This is Body All-in-One Detox Scrub. It's organic matcha. Here, smell.
Leave that one out for me. I love a good scrub.
Yeah, you got it, hun. Voyage AC has absolutely everything you need. Wonderful gifts for throws, beachwear, diffusers, clutches, beach bags, glamorous mask, hand sanitizer, and these organic, invigorating, and nourishing scrubs. So how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VOYAGEETCIE.com.
And as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount.
What?
All our customers right now. That's right. That's 10% off everything you buy.
All you need to do is enter the only one at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter the only one when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content.
And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. Calling all lovers of mystery. Prepare to don your detective hat in June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective who is on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. Take a trip in time to the glitzy 20s to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. If, like me, you get sad when a story comes to a close, never fear. With June's Journey, the thrill is endless, since new chapters are added weekly. And not only can you enjoy the detective adventure, but you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island, where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
And so you graduated 18 and then kind of fast forward to you falling in love with the beverage space and creating fusion products. Can you tell me about that?
Sure. I went to college trying to figure out what I wanted to do, moved to Chicago, really wasn't sure what I wanted to do with my life. Always kind of had an entrepreneurial bug in spirit. And I was in a new city, kind of moving from a situation where I was a big fish in a small pond, maybe in Columbus, Ohio, to a really big pond in Chicago and being a small fish and just trying to find my way.
Yeah.
Ultimately, through a series of different events, I landed with my first postgraduate job working for a startup vodka company. And I think I was young and dumb enough and probably aggressive enough to just, you know, believe that what they were doing, they being the company that I was working for, I could do just as good, if not better. And so I saw an opportunity with the popularity of caffeine and alcohol. Basically, I was selling a vodka that was cherry flavored, and a vast majority of it was being sold in Red Bull as what they called bomb shots. And so I had a buddy who was a fraternity brother of mine who had always kind of brainstormed on ideas with me. I called him one day and said, "Hey, let's start a caffeinated alcoholic product." And he said, "Yeah, let's do it." And that's really how the idea got started. And, you know, most people that know me will tell you that I'm kind of an action type guy. Just if I feel something and I know it's right in my bones, I just go towards it and figure it out as I go. And that's kind of what we did with Fusion. And so my partner, Jeff, and I started working on the idea for a couple of months, quickly realized we had some gaps in our capabilities. I called another buddy from Ohio State named Jason. And we said, we're going to give this a go. I quit my job, went full time with this. And we launched the first beverage in 2006, which was the first iteration of what later became Four Loko. And so that's how we got our start.
Wow. And that was kind of a movement in the beverage industry. That idea of combining those two things was new, and it hit a lot of people fast. Like, people loved it and it became really popular. And how long were you at the company? How long were you part of it?
Yeah, so I'm still part of it in terms of the ownership structure. In terms of day-to-day management of the company, I think it was about 11 years. Mm-hmm. And so for the first 2 or 3 years, it was a really rocky ride. You know, we're just, like many startups, struggling, trying to figure out what worked, what didn't. Scrappy, we didn't really raise any money, a little bit of money from my partner's families. And when we evolved the product line into Four Loko, to your point, it really took off, and it really took off fast. We went from, you know, barely surviving and considering closing the business down to becoming, I think it was the 8th largest brewer in the country in a matter of 2 years.
Wow.
So it was really exponential growth.
Mm. So talk to me about leaving the day-to-day of that. Like, how did that happen?
Well, again, that was a pretty long evolution story, but ultimately learned a lot of lessons from it. One of them, looking back, was the fact that, you know, we'd set these legal documents and operating agreements up via LegalZoom. They're just kind of cut and paste type documents. And to me, none of that really mattered at the time. I just had an idea and I wanted to get it out to people. And so ultimately, we just said, hey, majority rules, right? There's three of us. Mm. And so fast forward over the years, there were multiple things from a partnership perspective that were kind of cracks in our cohesiveness and at some points, even our personal relationship and friendships.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, for me, through a series of events, I just realized we weren't aligned and we were never going to be aligned. And so I started pushing to take some action. And, you know, I went to my partners and said, look, I'm not happy. Let's just figure something out. And much to my dismay, my partners, who were really good friends, you know, one of them, I was the best man in his wedding. The other one, I had known him and his family for years at that point, but they came back and said, well, just because you want to do something doesn't mean we need to do anything. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, that's not really my personality to kind of sit back. And so I started pushing every way I could to make something happen.
Yeah.
And at the end of that, what ended up happening was that I got fired from the company that I started and removed from day-to-day operations. And so that's how the transition happened and what started my journey into the next
yes,
thing.
It is. So that's what I wanted to ask you next, because you mentioned the dynamic there was something that you could look back on and see where you might have done things differently, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to let you tell it, but as I understand it from our conversation, you were later on talking to a friend, right, who used some kind of different language than you'd heard him use or that you heard applied to the situation that he was discussing. Is that right?
Yeah.
So can you tell me about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, our company, we were three young, aggressive, probably again, very masculine or maybe even toxically masculine guys running this company. Our culture was very much that way. It was hyper-competitive. It was, you know, in excess everything. It was, you know, we managed by dominance and micromanage versus empowering and all that kind of stuff, right? And
right.
So the story you mentioned around one of my friends, you know, one of my friends is a really big guy. He's got to be 6'4", 6'5",
mm-hmm.
I don't know, 250, something like that.
Wow.
And I had known him from being out in the bars and just from, you know, mutual friends, football games, things like that. And one day we were hanging out and he said something. He answered a question by, let me feel into that. And I was like, just taken aback. I had never heard somebody say that, especially this, you know, physically, this person that you would physically look at and go, oh, he's the epitome of masculinity, right?
Right. Like,
And I was like, okay, just let me listen more. And then something else got asked and he said, I don't feel like that's a full body yes. And I was just so intrigued, like, what the hell is this guy talking about? You know?
Yeah.
And I just started to observe over time, how he was talking. And in one of our conversations, it came up that his company was very in tune with their culture and was very much about personal growth. And they had a woman whose role within the company was conscious coaching and awareness coaching. Right. And I was fascinated by that. And he explained a little more and then ultimately told me that Daphne Scott is her name, that Daphne was starting a conscious coaching group and asked if I wanted to be a part of it. And so I joined that group. And it was really one of the pivotal changes for me from a personal perspective and mentality perspective.
Can I just ask you, did you have any idea that how much you were going to change your perspective? Were you hoping for that? Or were you just curious?
I realized I was on a journey and I didn't know exactly what that journey was or what it was for. I had probably a year before that been exposed to this group called Summit Series that I was fortunate to be able to go to. And it was a similar situation where I went to this event that they had and noticed people talking and, to be quite honest, thinking in different ways. And I was so ingrained in what I'll call survival mode. You know, as I mentioned, I grew up in a blue collar, lower middle class family. I was just trying to survive, trying to make some money, trying to establish myself. And I heard these people talking and the things they were doing and talking about were totally foreign to me.
Yeah.
But it was intriguing. So I don't think I could have told you what I was looking for or what path I was on. I just knew some things were changing.
Right, right. So what happened? What did it look like when you joined the group? What was it like?
Interesting is a word I'll probably use a lot because I don't know a better one to say. But it was interesting to say the least. I mean, it was the first time I was in a group of men. There was a woman directing kind of the flow of the experience, and she was not shy to call you on your shit, basically. Mm. Like, you know, we would use language, I think, as a cover up, right? Or we do as people. And so when that was detected either by her or other people in the group, it was called out, and you were forced to explain that or dig deeper into that and see if that's what you really mean, or if you really thought about what you're saying, or if it was just pre-programming. And so that level of thoughtfulness around what you say leads to thoughtfulness around everything, what you do, how you show up to people. And I think that really started me kind of questioning things and just paying more attention instead of going on autopilot. And tying it back to my career, I remember going through one of those sessions. You know, a person might get highlighted in that meeting and you would kind of be analyzed, not only by Daphne, but the rest of the group, and they would make suggestions and such. But I remember her saying, boy, you are passionate. You are going to be passionate about something. Mm. It's just not fusion.
Wow.
And I think that was before I was even really willing to recognize that.
Yeah, that's actually pretty cool. But I hear your passion too. I can totally see why she keyed into that. So Melanie is your wife, right?
Yes.
Yes. So did she, what was the impact with her? Did she notice you changing? Did she notice different language? Did she like it? Was she like weirded out? Like, what's going on?
Well, that's a great question, because at this point, Melanie and I have really gone on this journey together, right? Which is what you hope. We've been married for, I think it's almost 13 years, together for 20 years, and two kids coming from Youngstown, Ohio, and the kind of mentality that it is there, moving across the country to Columbus, to Chicago, and landing in San Diego, and kind of growing and evolving together. There was a lot against us in that realm, right? There were a lot of potential for her to think I was weird or me to change or, you know, whatever could have happened. Fortunately, I think we've both been very open to and supportive of the idea that you come to a relationship as whole people. And it's not like you're the better half of me or we complete each other. It's like, no, I'm complete and whole and you're complete and whole. And together, we enjoy being together. We have to make that choice all the time.
Right.
So she was very supportive. I think she, you know, I remember I came back from Summit Series and was just enthralled by this community. And I said, oh, we're moving to Utah. And I think at that point she said, what is this cult that you're talking about?
Right.
When I started working with Daphne, I think she noticed things, but that was more around a work setting. And so I know it crept into my personal life, but maybe not as much as you might expect. Mm. But at that same time, I was working with a personal, I guess more of a business coach mm-hmm. that I had met through someone else in the industry that had been very successful. And they did what's called a DISC analysis. It stands for dominance. I believe it's influence, structure, and compliance. And it's a personality behavioral assessment. And when he did my assessment, he provided it back to me. And as I read through it, I was shocked. I was like, this thing is exactly spot on for me. Mm-hmm. And the reason I knew that was because it wasn't only the good things that I like to admit, it was the bad things that I didn't want to admit, right?
Right.
And one of the things that coach had said to me is he said, your personality, there's such power in your words. He said, it's like you have a nuclear bomb in your pocket, but the real power is not to pull it out, just to know it's there. Mm. And when I told Melanie that, she immediately identified and said, like, I've been trying to tell you that for years. And so I think things like that got her more interested and excited about this type of journey as well.
Right. Well, and so that you two started Conscious Relationship Coaching, right, together. Is that correct?
Yeah, shortly after that, my buddy Grant, who had introduced me to Daphne, had also mentioned that there was this woman, Shakti, that he and his wife went to that kind of used the same type of framework and language and mentality, but applied it to relationships. Mm-hmm. And so we went and saw her, and I think that was probably really the beginning of Melanie's journey. And it was really helpful for me as well to start to not only look at business and the people that I'm dealing with there, but maybe more importantly, my family, my wife, my future. I didn't have children at the time, but my future children, and how we communicate, show up to, and are there for them. So
That was
the beginning of our collective journey. And then I would say that continued. At one point, we had heard of a woman named Dr. Shefali, and we found out she was going to be in Chicago. We went to her seminar, part of a large group, and she spoke about conscious parenting, which right. we didn't really even know was a term at the time. But it was amazing because they're all using the same philosophy about what you're seeing, observing is really a reflection of yourself. Mm. We can't look at others and point the finger.
Right, right. One is that thing, if when you're pointing the finger, there are five pointing back at you.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. and so, I mean, I just love this evolution for this guy who grew up in this really hyper-masculine environment, blue-collar industry, was very, like, you used the word aggressive when you were talking about how you pursued the things that you wanted during your career. And this beat that you took to really kind of take an overview of your life and look at it consciously, and then look at your relationship with your wife consciously. And then you have sons. You have all sons, right? 8, 6, and 3. Is that correct?
I do. Yes. Yeah. 8, 6, and 3, which makes it even more interesting that this journey started prior to their arrival, and
right.
that I was able to start working on some of that masculinity and or toxic masculinity and how I show up. Because as I recognize now with 3 young boys, I mean, the old saying of, you know, what you do is more important than what you say, or do what I say, not as I do, or whatever it may be, is totally true. I mean, I try to keep those in balance and say what I'm doing as much as possible, but I know that the doing definitely outweighs the saying in their eyes.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to circle back quickly to something that you said about you and your wife being whole people. Scott and I have this kind of philosophy that was given to us by someone else. And he called it the circles. And he mm-hmm. said, you know, he has his circle, you have your circle, and then you have your circle together. And you have to keep those circles complete, right? We have to fill up the circle yeah. together, but we have to make sure that we fill up our own circles and that we are whole people. And I just think that's so important. It was so important for us, and it gave us a lot of freedom to be ourselves and to pursue filling up the circle that's our relationship. as well.
Well, and it actually gave us some structure for the relationship too. Right. Which I think a lot of people just don't put I didn't put structure in my first relationship. So and consciousness and thought, you know.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we're running out of time, and there's a couple more things I want to get to. I want to talk about your self-care. So we'll talk about that next. But you said something that really intrigued me when we were talking. So now I'm moving to you creating Koya. So you're staying in the beverage industry, right? But you're creating a natural product, and you're going into the natural products industry, mm-hmm. which is a whole nother realm of it, right? Of the beverage industry. Totally different from, I mean, I know the industry that you're still part of, because you said you're still in the structure of a fusion, but this is your new baby, right, Koya?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you said that you were running it like you were in Youngstown, but you were here in California, not in the same city where we are, but you were like making it so that it wasn't just a California-specific product. This could be something that people would enjoy everywhere. Do you remember saying that to me?
Yeah. And so I'll add a little context to that. So when I first got involved with Koya, it was called Raw Nature 5, and I had invested in the company that my other two co-founders had created. Mm-hmm. And in concept, it was similar. It was a plant-based protein drink, low sugar, called something different, looked something different. Ultimately, I came in through a series of events to fund and co-found the new company, which we launched in 16, which was Koya.
Right.
And so one of my prerequisites of anything I either create or invest in is, does it translate? Because what we see in California, as we were talking about, or New York or any major metropolitan, is that you have a large concentration of people that can get excited about certain things, higher disposable income. They'd be willing to drink a smoothie that is perceived as healthier, but doesn't taste that good, for the health benefits. Right. But the main population, and I just pegged that as Youngstown, Ohio, right? But the general population of the country, they're probably not ready to make that sacrifice. And so our goal is to allow people to make incremental shifts to live a better, healthier lifestyle without requiring sacrifice. And mm-hmm. so that was kind of the framework around Koya that I was mentioning.
Right, right. And, you know, you've gone a little California out here, because you're in yoga, you do cycling, you're running, you're surfing, right? But you want to keep a broader view of and just keep your consumer in mind, because I think you're right. I mean, I'm actually less of a California consumer and more of a Midwest consumer, mm-hmm. in that I wasn't kidding at the beginning. It needs to taste good for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going to sacrifice that for health. I'm not going to drink wheatgrass. I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was a choice that you could sacrifice taste or health.
So I appreciate that, because it does feel more tailor-made for me. And I definitely believe that you are talking about the majority of the country and the world, probably.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah. That more people are looking. Yeah. We want to be healthy. But we want...
It's got to taste good.
It's got to taste good.
Yeah, and as a person who started cooking vegan, I know that people are like, I'm like, dude, you should try these meatballs. I know they're vegan, and they're like...
They're so good.
Yeah, but you know, people don't want to pay the price because they think they have to sacrifice something.
Yeah.
Well, the state of this industry is very, very interesting now. And we are vegan, but we purposely stayed away from a vegan position because mm-hmm. it was a little bit polarizing to a lot of people. Whereas the plant-based term becomes a little bit more friendly. And what we talk about is really the flexitarian lifestyle, where yes. I want to make a better choice at each meal, but I don't have to be so rigid mm-hmm. around I never eat meat or I never mm-hmm. whatever it may be, right? I never have an alcoholic beverage or whatever it is. And so we find that that's probably the way to address the largest audience, is like, this is just a better option that requires no sacrifice. And you know what? If you... you know, our motto is for the many, not the few. Mm-hmm. And so if you ate a hamburger or steak last night, it doesn't mean you shouldn't drink this. Scott, to your point, it's not like it's polarizing. It's like, oh, this is a delicious mm-hmm. shake, right. You know?
Well, even as a person who cooks plant-based, I try hard not to recreate something that's already been made. I like the idea that you can make food uniquely good as plant-based, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Vegan-ish was one of the most popular books last year because it's incorporating, it is that flexitarian lifestyle.
Yeah.
And there is nothing wrong with making healthier choices or substitutions when you can. Especially, like I said, if they taste great.
Right. Yeah,
do it. Well, just do it.
Just try it.
Well, I'll go back to your comment about kind of living the California lifestyle.
Yes.
And I will say that for me, it's all about like building your toolkit, right? And mm-hmm. so while I started doing yoga when I lived in Ohio because I was just oddly drawn to it one time. To be honest, I didn't know whether it was a religion or an exercise. It was really right. foreign to me, right? Mm-hmm. I started meditating one day because I felt like I was on the verge of a nervous breakdown. Mm. I started biking just because I found joy in it. I occasionally surf. I'm still bad at it, but I like to challenge myself. The point is, whether it's the exercises I do, the way I eat, the products that I'm creating or scaling, it's just about offering additional tools in your toolkit. And I take that same philosophy and apply it to my kids as, you know, they need to understand how it's okay to get angry. You're going to get angry. How do you express it, right? What tools do you have? I started doing breath work and cold water exposure because I found it was a great tool when I was tired or if I didn't feel good or if I was, maybe if I was angry, that's something that could bring me back, you know, it was a tool that I could use. And I would put Koya in that toolkit. It's like, you know, maybe people have overconsumed, whether that's food or alcohol or whatever during the holiday season or during the quarantine, right?
Yeah.
Here's a tool that you can use to kind of bring yourself back to a healthier lifestyle.
Well, I love that you're modeling that for your sons. I think that's so important. I think you looking for ways to nourish yourself and give yourself like the best, like you said, the best tools to, you know, de-stress, to calm anger, to feel better without looking for those things that might be harmful. You know, in order to do that, like the choices, all the choices you listed are beautiful and not considered typically masculine. So,
yeah. And I love to, it's easy to sit here and talk to you and you two and talk about all these things. But as we all know, it's an ongoing journey and it takes effort and I'm not perfect. And as I say, I'm redefining masculinity. I can get upset and yell at the kids, but what I know now is that I'm willing to go to them and apologize to them later, right?
Yes.
And correct that. And so I don't think it's about being perfect. It's about just continuing to grow and improve. And so I don't want to give the impression that I'm have evolved so much because anyone who knows me will tell you that's not true, but I'm doing better.
Well, no, I think that's, you know, maybe that's the best lesson ever.
Right.
Is that you're human, but you can be conscious enough to go to them and say, look, that was not okay, you know, when I raised my voice or when I said those things and you can do better, you know?
Right.
And that's, I mean, to teach three little men there, that lesson that I have two sons and, you know, my mother told me when I was little to think about the men I'm raising and not the boys that they are. And
that's great.
Yeah. And it was always a battle or a struggle, I guess, not really a battle. But I did want to give them those lessons so that they could have those skills in their tool set, that they could communicate, that they could make mistakes, they could apologize, they could, you know, upgrade and instead of, you know, remaining static.
So, I mean, it's the most difficult job, right? Because it's also about being willing to hold the space for them to, you know, make those mistakes or have their outlashes or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Because that's the natural response and then learn from those.
Absolutely.
Well, and then you give them the example of being able to own it and move forward, you know, as opposed to hiding it and ignoring it, which I think a lot of us in a hyper-masculine generation, you know, that's what we did. We saw like that whole like do as I say, not as I do, which you said earlier. That's what I grew up with. And there was a real deep part of me that knew that was wrong, but I just didn't have the tools to deal with it. The other thing is I was given to, I'm a girl maker. So I got two girls that taught me all about the importance of all of this stuff that you are teaching to your boys, honesty, trust, security, safety, all those things were taught to me by my daughters.
Yeah. Well, things that may be more traditionally associated with feminine or feminine energy, but those are true to everyone, boys or girls.
Yep.
And I think the other balance for me, especially around raising boys is, you know, it's a pendulum. And as we talked about, maybe all of us have this hyper toxic masculinity, you know, precedent growing up, but there's also the potential of swinging too far the other way, and where we emasculate our boys and they don't know who they are or how they're allowed right. to or supposed to feel. And I feel like that's a really important balance as well, is that, you know, we worked with somebody who said, look, boys are boys in some senses. They like to wrestle. They like to be, you know, with their dads, particularly, they like to have that interaction. They, and so not going too far is just as important.
I completely agree. And Chris, I could talk to you for much longer about this.
Right?
I'm looking at our time and I'm like, no, I have to end the interview. But this was such a great conversation. Thank you for being so willing to discuss this. I know this is not your normal conversation, especially when talking about your company and your brand and all of that. But for the purpose of this podcast, it was perfect. So I really appreciate you being vulnerable and sharing all this with us.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity. Great conversation. And thanks for doing what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, and thanks for the Koya.
Yeah, we like it.
We love it.
I'm glad to hear it.
We'll be getting more. The Only One in the Room has brand new interviews for you every week. You won't want to miss our full episodes every Tuesday, Scott Talks on Wednesday, and our new Thursday series, The Now Normal. And twice per month, be sure to catch our 30-minute Sunday edition by subscribing to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Join our Only One in the Room Facebook group if you'd like to tell us about your Only One story. All of us at The Only One in the Room wish you safety and wellness.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.